The Honest Wargamer, an honest and independent show run by gamers for gamers. We bring you the latest in critical meta discussions, zany list tech, and deep dive discussions about the hobby as a whole. We are supported by our fantastic patrons and Twitch subscribers. If you'd like to support us and join the team, that would be awesome. Don't forget all you hydro homies, stay hydrated. Now get yourself comfy. Rob is now here for today's episode of Stream Streak.
Day 200 and I forget, 17? Maybe, who knows. And one of my regular, semi-irregular, but wonderful, wonderful contributors, Sam the Morgan. Hello, sir, how are you?
Hi, Rob, I'm doing really well. How are you going?
Good, good. Discovered that I'm really into Peppa Pig now, but I didn't know that.
Very good. If you get an in-joke in like the first 15 seconds, you're doing really well.
That's really important. Just someone listening at home like, what's that reference to? I just big out to all of my Snooker fans in the chat. And anyone else who joined us live over on Twitch or YouTube or Facebook or wherever you watched us from, thanks very much. And everyone to the podcast, please stay hydrated, look after yourself. Rob, sit down. It's okay, I've sat down. Oh, yeah, everyone doesn't like it when I stand up. I move around too much, Sam. It's too much. oh, nice, look at your t-shirt. There we go. Yeah, this is Sam Morgan. If you don't know Sam, you should. From the Dwellers Below, there he is.
Formerly from the Dwellers Below.
Did you leave? Is this a Backstreet Boys moment?
Well, we haven't done a cast all year, and it's almost the end of October. So I don't know if we can call ourselves a live show. There's like murmurings about restarting, but being a sixth edition Warhammer show, which is sixth edition just had its 20th anniversary. So there's a bit of keenness to restart, but not as AOS anymore.
I like that idea. It's weird that the 6th edition has been kicking off in Australia, specifically in one household. But do you think that there's maybe a start of a revolution happening over there where it's just all Age of Sigmar's moving into 6th edition? Or
there's a big scene. Randomly, there's a big scene up in Sydney. There's more 6th edition Warhammer tournaments in Sydney this year than Age of Sigmar tournaments in Melbourne. Okay. It's just like, that's bizarre, right?
It's super weird. I don't know what's causing it, but the road has got everyone in a weird place.
Yeah, that's right.
How have you been? Have you been well? How have you been keeping? I know everyone will be interested.
Yeah, good, good. I don't know. I don't know how much I spoke about it when I was on with you earlier, but we're having a bit of a tough year. My dad got diagnosed with a brain tumor back in February and has been treated all year. And then earlier this month, he had successful surgery. So I'm in a different sort of location to usual. I'm at my parents because he's just gotten out of hospital. So we're in a really good spot now. You know, if we'd spoke 3 or 4 weeks ago, it was a lot more stressful than now. So it's been a really, like, really encouraging fortnight, which is great. It's nice to finally get some good news in 2020. And then, yeah, just from like a life perspective, it looks like we've been in hard lockdown for the best part of 3.5-4 months. It looks like we're finally in the next week or so going to be able to get out and do things again. So it's a really nice sort of turning point for the year for me. Touch wood, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, loads of love to your dad, like loads and loads of love.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. And anyone who's listening, like, throw Sam some love. Like, it's always worth it. Like, yes, I never know what to say. Good luck. Like, and honestly, I want to you know, when you hear, like, I'm one of those people, you hear someone's like having a tough time, you're like, well, what can I do? And they're like, people are always invariably like, oh, it's fine, you don't need to do anything. I'm like, no, but I actively want to do something now. Will a push-up help? Like, can I like throw a rock at someone? Like, what can I do? Anyway, loads of love to you and your dad. But while you're on that journey, there's also the thing that we're going to talk about today is that there's also some joy in your life. Do you want to introduce what we're going to be talking about?
My first love. So I got into AOS the Australia Day weekend. It was CanCon. It was a famous CanCon. It was CanCon 2018. So Adam Burt won CanCon with a MSU Stormcast army. really significant event in Australian history up there with the Emu War and with Harold Holt, who was the Australian Prime Minister, who disappeared off the coast of the country and was presumed dead and has never resurfaced. So I'd say they're probably the three big events in the last 100 years in Australia.
How long ago was the disappearance?
It was in the 70s. So people say if you want salt and like if you want salt and pepper, you say do you want some Harold Holt, and that means salt. And there's a pool in Fitzroy, which is a real hipster area, a real woke hipster area, and the pool is called the Harold Holt Pool. And that to me is a bit too far. The bloke's died out in the ocean, and they've named a pool after him. So anyway, they're the three big events. And CanCon 2018 is when the Daughters of Cain release came out. So I was sort of following along from home, had never played AOS, and I saw all these amazing models. I think it was the Canary Heart renders and the big Marathi reveal. And I just went out straight away that week. I was in the office in the city, and I just went straight to the closest game store and bought all of the Witch Elves that they had. And then I went online. I didn't know how Age of Sigmar worked, and I bought 8 Medusa. And yeah, as it turned out, they were heroes when the book dropped. So that was not a particularly clever purchase, but I was just massively like just the step up between, you know, static ranks and flanks models that I'd played with in 8th edition and the new Daughters of Cain release, particularly the snakes and as I said, the big Marathi, they were just jaw-dropping. And I would have put in, I don't know, somewhere in the vicinity of 200, 250 games with Daughters of Cain. So they're certainly the army I've played with the most and the one that I feel the most connection to. So I'm so excited that a new scroll's dropped today.
Yeah, new scroll, the Cainite Shadowstalkers. And also we've heard, well, not heard rumour, there's a campaign book, the Marathi book. So that's exciting, where I think we're getting new rules for at least the elves or portions of the elves as well. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw maybe some Eidneth in there as well, but... I don't actually know. I think maybe it's just DOK. So that's fun. And also, you're right. Interesting, though, that like you move away from 8th edition, you're excited by these like dynamic shapes on the tabletop that you can create. And then the army that you pick is an army that definitely works like the Two Tower Skaven. It's, you know, there's a cauldron. It walks forward very much like an 8th army. But apart from the Heartrenders are like such a key element in that army, which gets overlooked a lot. There's a great conversation at the minute about chameleon skinks fitting that same role, and then a bunch of stuff in, well, I don't know. Is there anything you think that the army needs? I know we're about to talk about the Shadowstalkers, but before we do, is there anything you think that the army needs to have that it doesn't really have right now?
Yeah, it can sometimes suffer from being a bit static. So being able to run and charge, being able to pile in the hero phase and clear out screens are both great attributes, but overall it's actually not a fast army at all. And that sometimes if you get bogged down, the scroll we'll talk about later, because maybe it's a comparable scroll, but a scroll like the Iron Golems from Slaves to Darkness can teleport in front of a Daughters of Cain army, and they might have 40 guys for 280 points, 40 guys with a 4-up save re-rolling, and they can actually pin a whole Daughters of Cain army in. If they were to do that in between a double, they could actually take you out for over a third of the game. So I think that they do really have a problem clearing screens, and I think they do really have a problem when they get tagged. So, something that it introduces more mobility and the ability to skip around without needing to worry about intervening terrain, endless spells, models is something that's really going to benefit them.
Okay, sweet.
Short answer is yeah, their weakness is they're a bit slow. That's the abbreviated answer.
I thought their weakness would be Gargants, but what do I know? I guess at this stage. Right. So thanks everyone for joining us in the chat, by the way. Love to see you here. So thanks tons and tons. You've prepared. I'm going to take you through this now. You guys should be able to see on the screen. Look at that. You have prepared a slideshow. Look at this. Arcanite Shadowstalkers, the best thing in AOS. Thanks for helping me with a clickbait title for later. I appreciate that. That's important. And the TLDR is yes. Is that correct? Give me like an elevator pitch. Why am I picking these guys up? So just for everyone at home, the Cain Light Shadowstalkers are a group. It's a war scroll that you'll find, or some models that you'll find in the new Warcry box set. It's one half of the Warcry box set. Currently, if you wanted to pick them up, you would have to pick up the entire Warcry box set, which I imagine in Australia is $8,000 dues. I'm not quite sure.
Yes. The comparison at the moment, it's $84 for the Untamed Beast. So 9 Untamed Beast is $84 and 70 points. That's a lot of money, man. So much money. And just for a contemporary comparison for people following at home, that still makes Untamed Beast cheaper than Gargants here and significantly better.
They're fine. They're so good. I've heard that. So what's my elevator pitch for the Cain Light Shadowstalkers? Why would I want to pick them up?
Beautiful models, stunning lore. So you shouldn't need anything more than that. But if you do, that they have a triumvirate of rules that is exactly what you're looking for in a Daughters of Cain army, and possibly some other factions as well. So we'll get onto the War Scroll, but that they're able to teleport. They have debuffs to hit in combat, and they're able to produce proc. They're able to proc mortal wounds. So that combination of attributes makes them incredibly valuable, regardless of the type of build you have. So they've got this sort of utility where if you bring them in, they're able to add anything, regardless of the style of play or type of list you build, and that's exactly the type of unit you'd like. Do you want to go through the scroll in detail? Have you got that page up?
Put it on the screen. There it is for everyone. Cain Light Shadowstalkers. Do you mind if I read the narrative? Cause it's always important.
Oh, by all means. It's my favorite bit. So
Shadowstalkers are the elite assassins and agents of Marathi. Oh, agents. These shade-marked wraiths slip into an umbral sub-realm in order to outflank their prey before charging forth in a murderous blur of sorcery and flashing knives. Very interesting. We also saw maybe a leak yesterday. The article that was released alongside these, in the community article, they wrote the word Umbraneth. Umbraneth. So we know Lumineth, obviously Lumineth Realm Lords, but they accidentally typed in Umbraneth, which then got edited to exclude the name Umbraneth. So maybe there are some Shadow Elves, so maybe... Malekiths.
Anirion?
Yeah, Anirion. Shadow Elves are going to be called the Umbraneth. There's been some great...
Do you think they'll retain his lore where he has a relationship with his mother, Marathi, or do you think that gets retconned out in 2020?
Well, I don't know. Like,
pretty wild stuff.
It's pretty problematic, let's be honest. Yeah. I don't think that there are any... The issue is there are no ladies on the writing team for the narrative, mm-hmm. and I don't know, boys will be boys, and they all love their mum, so we'll find out. But I guess the real question is, if it's going to be Umbraneth, what are they going to be? Umbraneth, the best version I've seen so far is the Umbraneth Realm Stalkers, so Realm Lords and Realm Stalkers I thought was quite cool, but with some Games Workshop naming convention, if you guys have got a good idea, please let us know. We're not sure, but I imagine they've blown the lead on them, like one of their releases like 2 years in advance. That's hilarious.
I would love them to be part of Chaos and to move away from the traditional four gods the Horned Rat. If they were to introduce something new in the Chaos pantheon, that would be really interesting to me.
I think so. Shadow's an interesting, like, it's hard, isn't it, for, like, I mean, I can't believe Daughters of Cain really order,
yeah, it's crap. They should definitely be they should definitely be a Chaos army.
Yeah, they're pretty wild. Okay, so the War Scroll, the Cain Light Shadowstalkers, they got one wound, 5 up save, they move 6 inches, they're brave 7, but none of that is overly relevant, I guess, because of the teleport. Do you want to take us through the War Scroll?
Yeah, sure thing. So these guys are movement 6, so typical for their that book. 5+ save, which there are ways to buff in the DOK book. Bravery 7 is really important because it means they outclass quite a number of other common troops. And Mind Raise is obviously a spell within the Daughters book, which is dependent on bravery. It becomes stronger if you have high bravery. Then they've got these missiles that do mortal wounds on a 6. They've only got a 6-inch range, so that's relevant because this unit's able to teleport, and they can teleport. It's really great. It says in your movement phase, instead of making a normal move with this unit, you can say they'll shadow leap. If you do so, remove them from the battlefield and set it up again anywhere on the battlefield more than 9 away. So the really relevant factor there is normal move, and it's in your movement phase. So you're not constrained by having to do it at the start or the end, and potentially, you know, forgetting, stuffing your sequencing up, but also you can do other sequencing stuff around it. And because it says a normal move, what that means, instead of making a normal move, is they could be in combat, you could teleport them out, and then you could charge them somewhere else because they never retreated. They actually were just set up again. So that's really great, because it means that there are situationally times when people think that they have you pinned, and then in your turn, you're able to as I say, teleport away and charge into other things and hopefully kill them.
It also means, you can, like, you could do like some light screening, and if for some reason you hold on in that situation, then you can just remove that. Especially like,
yeah,
especially
exactly.
If you take loads. Like the interesting point that we haven't talked about is obviously I don't know how many models there are in this. Is it 9 or 10 that they're going to be for the Shadow Stalkers? But
well, I think I've got a picture. I'm going to have a sticky beak. Give me
okay, because the comparison to Untamed Beast or any of the Warcry Warbands is normally you can take 3 lots of whatever the base number is, so 3 lots of Iron Golems in one unit. So when they've been translated into Age of Sigmar, normally you can take 3 times X for, like, so for Untamed Beast, it's not like you can't have a unit of 30, you can weirdly have a unit of 27. So this is quite important because
there's 10 models in the box, so that's good.
Oh, perfect. So yeah, you'll end up with, like, you'll probably be able to take 30 of these.
Models in the box, and the champion's worth 3 wounds, so you're getting just 12 wounds for a base unit of 10 as well,
which is sweet. Yep. So yeah, that teleport is also really important, because you might be able to lock something up and then just move out of your own way, and then mm-hmm. do like some backline holding or some screening or something else. So that's pretty cool. All right, nice.
They're just chucking out 2 attacks each, 4s and 3s, no rend damage 1. That's fine. You got 9 guys that have that weapon. That's 18 attacks. That's completely fine for what this unit is. And then the champion gets a different weapon. It's 3 attacks, 3s and 3s, rend 1 damage D3. So potentially that could actually do a decent amount of damage. And then collectively they're throwing out, you know, 21 attacks as a unit. So they're a good chance to beat off other chaff units, which ostensibly is what they are. Mm-hmm. And then it says if the unmodified hit roll for an attack made with the shooting attack is a 6, it's a mortal. That's really good, because you just want to stack up your opportunities to be doing mortals, and particularly if you are in a combat or if you're close to a character. Chip damage is super important in a Daughters of Cain army, because they're restricted basically to the Canary Heart renders and the Avatar as their 2 sources of shooting, and anything that's going to add to that is really important for clearing chaff and killing off support characters. Then the final rule that they've got, and this then goes to what we were just speaking about, Rob, subtract 1 from hit rolls in close combat against them, so melee weapons. And that's cool. It says for attacks made with melee weapons rather than in the combat phase. So what that means is any attacks that are happening in the hero phase, which quite a number of armies, obviously Khorne, Daughters of Cain, Stormcast, quite a number of armies can fight in the hero phase. So any of those attacks that are directed against them, if they're using the melee weapon, they're -1 to hit.
Yeah, which is super. Yeah, which is very useful. Iron Jaw's another good example. Fighting in the hero phase.
A better example.
No. All yours are also relevant. No. I mean, they all are. They really, really are. Yeah. But yeah, this is good. And like, and as you said, then that -1 to hit is massive. Actually, one of the things that's been going through my head recently, with obviously the release of something like the Mega Gargans, and also just always playing Nathan with the Netters, that -1 to hit doesn't sound like a big deal, but it's like so big. Like, it's a big, big, big deal, like, for survivability. I'd rather have that -1 to hit than +1 on their 5-up save.
Oh, yeah, 100%. What ends up happening as well, we've spoken about this in the past, is every time you increase a debuff, proportionally the increase is greater. So what ends up happening is the difference from going from 4s to hit to 5s to hit is a third, and then from 5s to hit to 6s to hit is a half, because of the way that the split works in maths. Mm. So if you can get people at -2, that's actually significantly better than -1, and then -3 is significantly better again. So anyway, you can look to couple that, whether it's Geminids, whether it's other rules within the book or where they might ally is obviously really strong as well.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. It's that one's really important. Like, you see it quite well with the Deceiver for the Vermin Lords. Like, that minus one to hit is a thing. And I'll take these 10 can tank a Mega Gargant Scissor Reaper, maybe.
when you're playing on the table as well, people do quick maths and they go, oh, I know that unit of Ard Boys hits like a truck because I fought these combats before, but what they fail to account for is just the neg one or the neg two, and that makes a difference. And if we're going to utilize that Shadow Leap ability to teleport around, we want 1, 2, 3, 4 guys to survive, you know, and then be a pest somewhere else on the board.
Nick in the chat has asked a good question, and I think this is relevant. Do you think that the max plus one to hit, minus one, well, they, basically in 40k they've capped modifiers,
capped it,
so you can only ever get plus one or minus one. I personally think we're definitely going to see that, as well as cohesion rules in Age of Sigmar in the next edition, which the coherency rules in 40k are quite strict now. You really have to kind of move things like flat, like blocks of infantry, just not on
bases. I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah, and I personally think we'll see that in Age of Sigmar. But that's not for now. So we've got to look at this. Can we just talk about presentation? Can we all get some love for Sam in the chat, please, for how good this looks? Analogous War Scrolls. Take us through this.
All right, so we've got two different types that I think are similar. We've got the ones that fit within their Grand Alliance, and then we've got the ones that have come from the alternate game, so Warcry. So if we have a think about the Order version, stuff that shoots and teleports includes Heartrenders, Tree Revenants, Shadow Warriors, Camo Skinks, and Life Takers. And they're mainly pointed at about 12 to 14 points a wound, with the Shadow Warriors being the standout there for only 11 points a wound. I personally don't rate Shadow Warriors. I think both Chameleon Skinks and Heart Renders are better than them, but that they're still a good War Scroll, and they're still sort of a good analogy for this War Scroll that we're looking at. On the basis of the way that stuff's pointed in order, you would anticipate that when these guys, when we get their points cost and unit size, that they're probably going to be 5 for 80. But because it's a box of 10, I thought we'd look at the Warcry units as well. And if you think about the Untamed Beast, and if you think about the Iron Golems, both of those units are only 70 points. And I think that they're relatively close in terms of parity, in terms of their strength. They're not miles off. So the Untamed Beast in particular, you might be able to mount an argument to say that they're more impactful in game. And then there's that other unit. What's the one? Is it the Corvus Cabal that you can't retreat from?
Yes.
Which is
Iron Golems get the reroll. They get a reroll save if they haven't moved.
They're great. They're such a good unit in an objective game, and such an underutilized unit by stupid Chaos players.
Just
do you know my mate? Do you know my mate Stuart? He's the Iron Guts King, and he just keeps smashing everyone on TTS with his 24 Iron Guts.
And he's been using Hosts Arcanum recently.
Yeah, he's so far into Iron Golems. Yeah, he plays the Screamers as well. That's right. Yeah. He loves the Iron Golems, and that to me is always like a red flag. This is an under the radar strong unit.
Okay, all right. That's a hot tip. Untamed Beasts, like, I've talked about how much I love them for a long time.
Sensational.
But arguably, and I think I have been turned on to the idea that Ungol Raiders just do the job better for 10 points more. Because you get a shooting attack, which is cheeky. But yes, normally my thoughts are, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, my thoughts are with the Warcry units is they just write a War Scroll. They don't think about it at all. Then they just give them some points because they're like, the Warcry is their main game. They're like, oh, give a bit like with the Underworlds kind of characters.
Shades,
you know?
Player, yeah.
Yeah, because some of them are like a big
That's
deal.
That's dartboard stuff, man. That's like complete dartboard stuff. You don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah, you could get anything. And that's true because the Chaos version of inside the new Warcry box, all their War Scrolls, terrible. So in this situation, I think that you'll end up with something like this where they're at that 70-point mark, which becomes pretty scary.
Like 70 or 80 is a price point where you can take shitloads of them. That would be excellent.
Mm-hmm. And also, we talk about those Camo Skinks. Only 5 for 90. But many, like the top, I would say like the most like hyper efficient version of the Seraphon list that are in Fangs of Sotek at the minute are at least dropping 2 fives in there. So they're like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, but sometimes you see more. but they're like
they're my number one deep strike for order. So in my mixed order at the moment, I run 6 units of camo skinks and 2 units of heart renders.
Wow.
So I've got 30 camos because the range and the 10 shots and how small their footprint is and the bonus saving cover make them just unbelievable. Yeah, I love them. I was playing a game with them the last game I played before we kicked into lockdown, and I dropped 2 units on Alinda, and I just mortal wounded her off. Like I spiked, but that's the way it works, and it was just like 180 points. Now the Nighthorn army doesn't work.
Okay, yeah, agreed. Also, big shout out to Shadowhammer in the chat. Also, Dave Fraser says he would like to give us 180 points for 10 of them. I'm afraid not, Dave. We're not accepting that offer. I reckon it's going to be 70 points for 10, and we're going to be in a scary time.
I'll tell you the price point that we need from like an overall balance perspective is typically Idenet Deepkin armies finish and they have 190 points in the bank. So if they are 90 points or fewer, you could run 2 units in Ideneth, which is just a disaster for everyone playing against them. So we need them to be 100 points or more. Otherwise, yeah, they just become almost an auto include in some of those Ideneth builds.
I would really like Ideneth to get no more bonuses if it's possible. Really, really hoping for some significant war score changes. I'm scared with the campaign books that somehow Ideneth are going to get a buff. And I'm like, why? Yeah. Why is that? Like, it's my currently unsettled feeling that I've got. And also thanks to O'Reaper in the chat, who says he doesn't like the pictures. Pictures, because he's got too many words and he's a destruction player, which I completely understand. So who can take them? So the allies chart for these guys.
Yeah, so we've got Daughters of Cain, obviously. They can go into cities. Idenet Deepkin, Stormcast, and Mixed Order. I don't know, is anyone else... I don't have any of my books here about my folks. Is anyone else a Daughters of Cain ally?
I don't know, to be honest.
I think that looks comprehensive.
Yeah, that feels comprehensive.
Maybe in the old days, Wanderers maybe, but they're not a thing anymore.
No, they're not. I like actually, now you've said Cities of Sigmar. I like Cities of Sigmar, them in Cities of Sigmar. That's quite interesting because Shadow Warriors never really had their day. They were used, but like I felt like the price point was just a bit much for like not much. But these guys in Cities is genuinely very interesting, especially for some of the more like brick and hammer builds that you would see in something like Tempest Eye with like a lot of Iron Drakes. You know, like they can move up the board fast, but they don't necessarily have like a backdoor objective. You see some gun haulers going in that role sometimes. And now these are gun haulers, but better, or gun haulers, but different. Let's put it that way, which I think is interesting.
That's the confirmation. You haven't read through the slide, Rob, because the final slide is about where are we going to see them? And I think I said not in cities, but we'll get to that shortly.
That's good. I didn't want to read through it. I want to be taken on a journey.
We can have a row then.
Oh, there's no flag in the ground on this one. I'm comfy. Gargants and shit's my only flag. Like, that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, mate. I'm with you.
All right, so that's who could take them. Why take them in Daughters of Cain? Tell me.
All right. So Daughters of Cain is a really interesting one because you've already got Sisters of Slaughter, and you've already got Witch Elves that are typically people's battle line choices. I know you can take the snakes as well if you've got a Medusa as your general, but typically you're going to see those 2 units. So that there needs to be some point of difference, and that's the thing we've got to sort of work through. So the allegiance abilities, having a damage prevention roll, that's just a free buff. That's great. Rerolls to hit and wound are really important, particularly on those shots that we're going to be getting for trying to fish for mortals. And then the buff, so that a big unit of these, let's just say in an ideal world, let's say you can take 30 of these for 210 points, which will make them 90 points cheaper than the battle line comparisons. A big unit of 30, you could give them the sippy cup, so they're immune to battle shock and they're re-rolling to wound. You can chuck Catechism of Murder on them, so sixes to hit are becoming double hits. You can mind razor them, and this is where their bravery 7 becomes really important, because the altar gives them +1, or the Avatar of Cain gives them +1 to their bravery, and then there's other ways to buff bravery in Daughters of Cain army. So it's possible to get them to bravery 11, which means they're outclassing everything, and then they're doing rend 1 and damage 2, which would be really important. And then the ult is giving them plus 1 to their armor save. So it is possible to get them up to a 4-up save with a 5-up damage prevention roll, which is super tanky. Or if you're wanting to take multiple small units, you get them in cover and get them on a 3-plus save with a 5-plus damage prevention roll. So that makes them super tough to grind through. Mm. And then the ability to redeploy. So we sort of touched on this at the start of the cast, but one of the things that I found playing Daughters was that sometimes you get pinned. And a good example of that might be like a teleporting unit of Ard Boys. Maybe there's 20 of them. They charge in, they pin in a big significant chunk of your army while the rest of the Orc army goes off and collects objective points and beats you that way. Whereas this unit can get out of that situation pretty easily and still be applying pressure on the objectives elsewhere.
Which is also, that was what I meant when I was talking about them in maybe larger blocks later, is because you can commit somewhere where you don't really want them, but you want your opponent out of position. Like, or mm-hmm. you can put them somewhere to block, so your opponent's out of position, then you can just get them out there to put somewhere else, and something else can, you know, if you've got something that's maybe slower, not that, like, you don't have loads of issues with mobility, but a bit, you know, maybe you don't want to, or you want to use them as a screen a bit, and then you can drop them out somewhere else. I actually think that's a really nice, putting someone somewhere they don't want to be, and then just removing yourself from that conversation is so good. Yeah, super annoying. Like, that would be really good.
Any sort of dummy play is really great as well. So if you press on a flank, and then they address that by moving their stuff across to counter you, and then you just teleport to the other flank, which is one of the things that people often do with the small boats in KO. They'll pop them in just out of the way, and any attention that they draw, it's sort of like a bit of a trap to go and chase them. You're better off just ignoring them. Just not in relation to the scroll, but anyone out there that's a consultant, consultancy 101 is if you type anything in capitals, run a spell check. So that's not how you spell general, but that's okay.
Good. Yeah, I don't know
like
where
somewhere a grad's been slapped around the head like 10 times for that mistake, I'm sure. All right, sub-faction specific. So there's two temples that I'd take these guys in. I'd take them in Hagnar because the 5++ the damage prevention roll is obviously really strong there. And then the reroll. So the reason that the rerolls are strong is in Hagnar, it's not just reroll once to hit, it's reroll all to hit. So if you're hitting on fours with your shooting, you're getting 150% on your return for the mortal wound output. So if it turns out that these guys are cheap, like 10 for 70, that's our ideal situation, and you're running, I don't know, 90 of them, 1.5 times the mortal wound damage becomes really significant. Then, like we see that with the Lumineth, when they're able to get the spell off and they're proccing mortals on fives, that's so much more consistent and dangerous than when they're proccing on sixes. So that's obviously really strong. I dislike Hagnar. It's not a temple that I was playing when I was on Daughters of Cain. It's a bit boring. It's a bit vanilla. The one that I like is Caelebron. So this one gives you something that you've already got in your army, which is in Caelebron, you're able to teleport every hero phase, start of the hero phase, and this gives you additional teleport. So it's leaning into something the army does, and it's giving you some redundancy. I like that. And Caelebron natively is -1 to hit from shooting. So being -1 to hit from shooting and -1 to hit in combat, again, it's adding this element of what do we already do well, and it's having this sort of strength focus and enhancing the strength. So I feel like that's where I'd like to see them. And the list I was thinking about with these guys, there's this, what's it called? Is it the Shadow Walkers Battalion, Shadow Hunters Battalion, something? It's 2 units of Doomfire Warlocks, it's 4 units of Canary, and then I'll take as many of these as I could fit in as well. And what that allows you to do is a teleport in the movement phase. So you can teleport stuff at the start of the hero phase and teleport in the movement phase. Every time you teleport with your Canary Heart Renders, you're setting them up, and when you set them up, they're Rend 2. So that army could just be going all over the place. And I really like the sound of that. I think that sounds really strong. But there's this cool trick you can do in that army with your Doomfire Warlocks. So at the start of the hero phase, what you do is you teleport 10 Doomfire Warlocks somewhere, and they cast their spell, which is a flat 6 mortal wounds. They kill a support character, and then they get to use the teleport from the battalion to teleport away in the movement phase. So they're able to be really like flexible and really threatening, regardless of where you've deployed them, regardless of what they're doing in the game.
Yeah, that's really fun. That's really, really fun. Like, especially like old wood elves.
Yeah, like, that's exactly how they play. Yeah, that's a really good a good comparison.
Yeah, so hit and run strategy all across the board, which is super, super frustrating to play against. Like, one of the things that is problematic, talked about this a lot on the show, but just in case anyone needs it reinforcing, problem obviously with Skinks or Seraphon at the moment, specifically is they can choose somewhere to someone to teleport from somewhere to somewhere else. And that is just, that ability is still better than reducing all incoming damage by one. So, like, understand being able to do it twice. It's really opened the game up in a big way.
So anything on a 25 mil as well, it makes a big difference, man. Sometimes it's hard to get those units on 32s or on 40s. It's hard to get them where you want them to be. 25s can squeeze into a lot of small spaces. They're a lot harder to screen against.
Yes. Yeah, they're really small, really, really small footage, which is really exciting. Can I just say thank you to Crazy Horse in the chat for subscribing and donating some gift subscriptions. Big love to you. He says hit and run is what I call sex with Jacob Berry. I think we all call it that, to be honest. Or smooth and clean, that's what I call it. Right, next page, viability outside Daughters of Cain. Woohoo, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
What we got?
All right. So who do we say could take them once? All right, so they can go in the Ideneth, the Cities of Sigmar, the Stormcast, or the Mixed Order. We'll start with the Ideneth. So Forgotten Nightmares is one of the Allegiance abilities, and what it says is that you have to shoot the closest unit to you. So what that means is you can use these to screen the eels, and they have to shoot these guys. That's awesome. The cheaper these are, the better that is. So if these, as I said before, if these are like 70 or 80 points, that becomes amazing. If you can get 20 bodies down. And I've been running screens in my Ideneth army, and the problem that I found is that the eels are so fast, the screens get left behind. And then after turn two, they're not a relevant factor in the game with these guys, because they can teleport wherever you need them to go. They can do their turn one roll, maybe turn two roll to protect the Morsar guard from being shot. And if they all die, that's a trade-off you're completely comfortable with. And if any of them survive, they can then teleport around the board for the rest of the game, applying pressure and scoring. So to me, that's amazing. The sub-faction that you'd look to get them in, I think, is Iron Rack. So that's the sub-faction where you gain the Tides of Death ability. So what that would mean is turn one, they'd automatically be in cover. Obviously, that's really strong. Turn two, they'd be able to run and shoot, which is really great because that shooting only has a 6-inch range. So if you need to get them somewhere to apply those last couple of chip wounds or whatever, that's really important. And I think, are they worth taking? Yeah, absolutely. Interested in your thoughts on this pretty versatile unit in an army that I think is going to benefit from them. Rob, what do you reckon about them in Ideneth?
Yes, annoying already. Like it's also the fact that like, the Ideneth player sometimes has to make a choice. The really, really good Ideneth players, they are thinking where they're going to be turns 3 and 4, like a lot of the
exactly.
time. They're going to commit here. Their resources are quite low to give them their due. The resources they have are quite low, but they're very impactful. They have a lot of resource, but they're tightly packed into very small clumps of application. So that's why the Aetherwings are normally there just to hold an objective or do a thing. But these guys have a little bit more utility than that. They could arguably fight a character off an objective, which probably the Aetherwings can't do. But unlike the Aetherwings, who are still fast, these are even more mobile. So that's actually more problematic because you're giving... Also, the skills you're developing as an Ironeth Deepkin player is thinking where you want to be in a couple of turns, which means that you're processing much further ahead. And trying to set stuff up, and I feel that these guys are going to give you another tool to help expedite that problem for everyone else. Like you're already playing that kind of game with your movement, and giving those tools to that group of people is really scary. So yes, excellent, and also not fun. Like depends on which side of the gun you're on in that situation.
Exactly. All right, next one, City of Sigmar. So there's nothing from the city's book that sort of specifically benefits the unit. So we'll just jump straight into the sub factions. I reckon there's two where I'd look at them, but interested in your thoughts, because I've just based on what you said earlier, I've had a new idea around maybe these guys working in the Greywater Fastness or in Tempest Eye, where they become, you know, a screen that's able to bounce around and be where it needs to be. But I think in Anvil Guard, that they would benefit a lot from that spell, which changes the person's save to just a dash. So depending on how many points these are, if you could get a big unit, like a unit of 30, and you could get a hag in there as your allies' choices, 30 of them could run up and butcher things in combat, because they'd be punching out a heap of attacks. They'd be re-rolling to wound, and then the opponent wouldn't get a save, and that could be really good. Even just their shooting is really good if the opponent doesn't get a save. I don't think Anvil Guard is the most popular of the sub-factions, so it's probably unlikely you'll see that, but that's something I thought you could try. And then Living City, I thought in the Living City, when you've already got so much null deploy, potentially you've already got tree revenants in your army, this could really enable you to double down on that. You could have a whole army that's just teleporting around the board and in no fixed position. The one thing with Living City that's worth noting, though, is that they don't count for that Hunters of the Hidden Path rule. So you know where it says one unit has to be on the board for you to deploy one unit off the board. Yeah. It's one Living City's unit, so that they wouldn't count against that. But you could have a situation where maybe you have three of these guys, you've got three units of the Tree Revenants, and then you've got three units deep striking, and then maybe you've got something like a prime deep striking, and all of a sudden, you know, you've got 10 units that are going to be wherever they want over the course of the game.
Yeah, I agree with you. Just to answer a question for third over there in the chat, Iron Arc, it specifically reminds me of Thiepken, allows allies' abilities to be put onto allegiance abilities to put onto allies. So
yeah, that's right. That's why it's super super good in some situations. The other thing I've been thinking about for Iron Arc is the Stormcast Eternal guys that ride dragons and have machine crossbows.
Yes.
Because they've got a 3+ save reroll one. So if you chuck them in Iron Arc, they've got a 2+ save rerolling once turn one, and then anyone within 12 of them is neg one to hit from shooting. So if you took two units, it's like 380, and you can screen your whole army, and then they're beasts in combat. They do mortal wounds. They're really good. Anyway, Iron Arc's got some cool things. And then if you want to go to a tournament to win, you wrestle with it and you say, oh, Iron Arc this, Iron Arc that, and you take Dom Hain because it's the best by a fucking mile.
You do. Like, but you could make some cooler armies at least.
Yeah,
and with cool some style. Cities of Sigmar, for me, the issues with Cities of Sigmar is the reason that we saw Shadow Warriors a lot, or you saw it at least a bit, is because people, like, you can front hit really well. And I know in something like Living City, which we haven't seen loads of tournament play with, we've seen some but not loads. Especially when it comes to like results, like they're able to bring stuff on the side, but the army can't throw everything at you at once. Normally, there's normally slow elements. If you want the really good buff, like +1 to hit, then you're going to be moving at the same pace as your battle cart. So there's an issue there. So, but Tempest Eye obviously deals with the problem of speed. But again, or the bridge deals with the problem of speed and being able to move across the board. But you're normally moved into one place, and with Tempest Eye, you're hitting in the front. Even though it's shooting, you're still there, like at the front. Which what I like about these in something like that is that the whole book doesn't really have the role of that deep striking unit. It has the prime, obviously, and it's got the Shadow Warriors. Agreed, but I think these do a better job, because once the Shadow Warriors are down, that's where they are. Like, and you see sometimes
they're bad once they're down. That's why I don't like them. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas I think that this is pretty good, because you're going to be able to like teleport around the board. Like, and I actually think, I think Caesar Sigmar could benefit from just having these, just because you're like, actually, I could do with having that. That's something that I need, you know, and just pretend that they're archers of old. I guess. But, and also the other problem with cities as well is they don't have any pre-game move stuff. Like, they've got no way to screen out from loads of the prevalent threats at the minute. So having something that makes the opponent worry about where they're moving into could be at least a bonus. But that's my only thoughts into City, personally.
So with Living City, I think if you're playing them and you're thinking you're going to deep strike and then you're going to rear charge and kill stuff, that's not how you're going to win games. I think what you want to be doing is having Phoenixes and other things that are incredibly durable go and tag units, not fight them front on, tag them and survive for as long as they can with the innate healing and the innate debuffs. And then you want to teleport other annoying units around, and you want to create as negative play experience as you can. If you're wanting to win the event with them, what you're wanting to do is string very cheap units of five models in such a way that your opponent can't move and really pin them in. That's how you would win events. You wouldn't make any friends, but that's the correct way to play them if you're playing to win.
You're not meant to
like, this
friends.
Is just the thing. No, that's right. This is the thing though. Like, people say you can move after you shoot, and they think, oh, isn't that great? I'll move into combat. But what you do is you shoot, and then you move backwards.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed.
That's the play. Anyway, that's a separate conversation. How to not enjoy games and make your opponents enjoy them less is probably not a good topic for casting.
That's a great one. Let's definitely do that. Like,
all right, Stormcast Eternals they've got their own version of Catechism. So Blessed Weapons is a prayer that just works on friendly units. So potentially that could be useful with these guys. It's not something you build a list around. It's just a nice little bit of tech that you've got access to. And their allegiance strength is on the turn they come down, they're neg one to hit. And mm-hmm. half their units can be deployed off the board. So you've got these guys that are also neg one to hit. You've got a couple of nice little support characters that give neg one to hit buffs, and that they can affect allies as well. So you could get an additional neg one to hit through them. And I think that potentially could be cool. The area that I take them in is Anvils of Haldenhammer. So Anvils is the one that lets you shoot in the hero phase and in the shooting phase, so shoot twice. The problem with that is that you can become a little bit static, so you can be a bit of a gun line. So what these guys enable you to do is they enable you to double screen. So you screen first with them and then second with the Aether Wings, and that should give you enough time to always be able to move your long strikes around. So, you know, you're paying your 70 points for an extra turn of shooting from a long strikes, which in my mind is absolutely worth it. And the other deficiency of Anvils is that they're relying on teleports, and sometimes those teleports are through priests, and that they need to hit a prayer. So if they miss the prayer, this gives you another opportunity to teleport and go and steal a back objective. So what you might be able to do with these guys is two rounds of shooting with long strikes is enough to clear like quite significant blocks. And then by teleporting this unit up there, you're able to score with them as well. So it's just being able to have a presence around the board while your gun line sits back in a safe position.
I'm just enjoying listening to you talk, if I'm 100% honest. I don't like have a follow-up other than I'm just enjoying this entire experience.
I think Stormcast suck. I think that book is so bland and boring. It's so lame. Like, it's 2018. It's a 2018 book. It needs to be modernized. It's just so out of whack.
It also wasn't very like dynamic at release.
That's right. When it came out.
Yeah, when it came out, it was just like drop charge, you know. And a lot of the War Scrolls are pretty rubbish. I think also the interesting thing with the shoot cast list, specifically what we're talking about with Anvils and Heldenhammer, the kind of two choices at the minute are take mega battalions and you spend like nearly 500 points in battalions and you're one drop, or you take none and you just get more shooters. And this way, if you are in the I'll take none and I'll get more shooters,
you have to take none. The mega battalions, you hold 2,000 points. I was just like excluding that from the conversation.
Yeah, exactly. So like, and then so now you can move into having some more utility pieces instead of just like I'll just take more raptors. You can just have more utility pieces, because you won't find those utility pieces based in the Stormcast book, because the Stormcast book is a dearth of imagination. It's literally just like, yeah, you know, it's Rogue One basically.
like Elthurion is really good in the Stormcast book because they've got nothing that's ethereal. That, you know, that can run around chopping stuff up, and units like Shadow Warriors and like Camo Skinks are good in Stormcast. I don't know what they're going to do next time around, but it's just a heap of chunky slow dudes that aren't that interesting to me.
I'd like to see them just diversify out. I think if they did if they explored the sub factions, if they Space Marined them, I don't hate that, you know, like, and then you've got a variety of ways to play them at least, and maybe one's always better, but like, yeah, you make these guys more fighty and you give them the tools for that. You make these guys more shooty, give them the tools for that. I think that's fine. I think they've got the model range to do so. I think they need to diversify the book, because arguably there's too many models, and with a new release there'll be even more. like there's too many in that book to make them as interesting. You see that already in some of the other books as well. Like I think they did a wonderful job on the Lumineth book with Eumetrica and the, you know, with the Fenari and the Alarith, sort of the differential between them. I think that's I think that's actually really nice. Like, and I'd like to see them like understand their own books more. I think that would be really important. And in Mixed Order, your favorite.
Yeah, I love Mixed Order, man. Define Avengers. So what happens in Mixed Order is that you natively get a reroll for battle shock tests. And what that means is you want stuff that can operate relatively independently and be safe from battle shock. So Bravery 7 is really important there. You know, if you lose three guys, you're on a five to lose models, you're getting rerolls, whatever. So it's a super important allegiance ability, and being Bravery 7 is really important for that. So that's a good point. And I think that these guys, that they do outclass some of those other options. So on that earlier slide, we had Life Takers. They're clearly better than Life Takers. Depending on how many points they are, I think they're better than Shadow Warriors. And then it becomes a question of, they're better than the Tree Revenants because they've got that mortal wounds and the neg to hit. And also because the Tree Revenants are five models on 32 mil bases, that's a big deal. So then it just becomes a question of where do they sit comparative to Chameleon Skinks and Heart Renders in terms of which you're going to take. And if the point of difference for these guys is that they're, say, 10 models for the cost of five for those other two units, that these then become a really important unit in that sort of conversation about which ones you want to run. And for me, I like the fact that you get to put them down on the table so you can use them as a cheap screen early game, or you can use them to bolster an objective early game when those other units would be off the table anyway. So that's one of the few flaws, I suppose, of Camo Skinks and Heart Renders, is that for some of the game, what they're actually doing is not being on the table. So, you know, it's a strength and a weakness because your opponent has to protect areas that you don't have any models, but it's a weakness because they're not actually, there's no output there, and you're paying for the number of shots they're getting over the course of the game, and that diminishes over time. So if your five Camo Skinks are off for three turns, they're actually only getting 20 shots as opposed to the 50 shots that they could be getting.
Yeah, okay. That makes loads of sense. And I'm not going to ever argue when it comes to a mixed allegiance faction at this stage. I'm just not. Honestly. And Mixed Order's got lots of options for that moving around. Actually, a lot more than some of the other armies. So that's a good one. Definitely.
So without knowing the points, I'm buying 40 of these guys. I'm getting four boxes. That's where my heart's landed today.
Really?
Yep.
That's
dead set. Done.
it makes it like the minus one to hit is the thing that like is a big seller for me. That's a big seller. I know the teleport's super clutch, but that survivability when they do teleport is actually like not nominal. That's like super important. And also the three wounds that you get on the main character, like you said, they dart bolt the rules. So you're just like, well, actually, that's because if you wanted to, you elect to take the three wounds off that. You don't suffer the battle shot test, and then
that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, like, and then you could just be like, cool, I'm still outscoring you on the objective in that situation, unless you want the damage, because the damage is really based on that one character. So I just think...
Don't want the damage. The damage is a trap, don't you? Unless you take a big block of them and you invest in buffs, they're not for fighting. That's not their job.
No, I don't
take,
think so.
Take fighty stuff to fight, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's an argument with tree revs. Kind of fight, but yeah, same with Heart Renders. Their job is to maybe spike some damage, but their job is not to actually do that.
Tree Revs are really interesting because they have a level of reliability. They get a single reroll per phase, and they have a 6-inch pile in. So, but both those things, coupling those things, makes Tree Revs a legitimate threat for backline characters. That's the thing that they've got going for them, but they have five wounds and from memory a five up save with no way of enhancing that. So that they quite often die to a stiff breeze, whereas these guys have 12 wounds and they're able to impact the game in other ways. And I think with the minus one to hit, they're a lot safer bet of surviving the swing back.
Agreed. Also, the key conversation, which is a conversation that's been had a lot recently, obviously because of Gargans. You know, in that
Gargans
are
fucking terrible. They're not, like, it's not a good point of comparison. Talking about Dom Hain before, Dom Hain just got better. Isn't that great?
My point was, sorry, is that like ball control for them is an issue. Like, and some of the most relevant threats there are. So Seraphon have got ball control forever. They've won that game. They've got the teleport. They've got all the bodies on the board. They win. Like, even if you backline them, they've got basically an indestructible character at the back. So like, you don't play that game, which is the hardest problem with them. You can't hit him in the front. Can't hit him at the side. Can't hit him at the back. It's an issue. But then when you start to talk about some of the other relevant threats, so KO, Lumineth, Change Host, specifically Fire Slayers and Eels, like a proportion of them are very reliant on being able to control the board space, being able to, like, with KO, it's drop where they go. It's Fire Slayers, it's to move and not get blocked up, which is why that pile and attack twice is so, so important. It actually gets them further along the board, which is really, really important towards places. With Change Host, they want to move where they want to move. They don't want you to mess around with them. They don't want you to touch the Law of Change. And Lumineth also can't control board space overly well. They can project power really well into all of the board space, but they could, like, before you shoot, you move before you shoot. So moving around. So, like, these are actually very valuable, it seems like, and I'm happy that you've expressed how powerful you think they are, because that controlling board space is more of a conversation than people currently realize. Is why the conversation about Gargants is, from me at least, like, not very strong, is because that controlling the board, like, they're like, they'll hit you. I'm like, they won't be able to because someone's going to move something in front of them, which is a key element of Age of Sigmar, which I love.
Yeah, and one of the really nice tricks you can do, and experienced players know this, but new players might not be aware of it, is that you can work out where the back of the base is, and then you can project forward from there and make sure there's no 3-inch bubble, and you can actually pin things like Terrorgeist, Zombie Dragon, Star Drake, Phoenix, a heap of flying units. You can pin them in so that they can only actually move about 6 inches. So say a unit with like a 14 or 15 inch move, this is something that's far better represented visually, but if you can just try and abstract, the back of the base needs to be 3 inches behind the screen. So what that means is you can actually just sit in such a way that their big monster is only able to move 6 inches. So that's something to be aware of as well. And back when Legions of Nagash were strong, that was a really, really strong counter to the triple dragon or the double Terrorgeist feck lists that were around. And that still works now on quite a number of armies. Just things to watch out for are, like, obviously a Maw Crusher will move twice. So it'll move and then it will clear you when it moves in the movement phase. And something like a Stonehorn something else in the army might charge you and clear out the chaff line. And then you might have an opening that you weren't anticipating. So mortal wounds out of sequence can stuff that up. But that's something important to remember as well, that when you are teleporting around, if your trade is you're saying, I'm paying 70 points, and what that 70 points is doing is it's stopping a Terrorgeist from getting to the middle of the board, and that's ultimately going to win me the game. It's a great trade-off.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and that's, again, control of the board space is the game. It's winning the game.
Yep.
Like, and it's like, which is why threat ranges on something like Eels is actually very, very relevant, because that's how they control. They don't control it by blocking. They control it by aggressively blocking, which is something we talk about in the 40K show a lot. Like, the ability to project range, project threat at range is as much of a, like, you physically can't go to a place as anything else. So really, really key. I love this, and thanks so much. This is probably like the best show I've ever done because you did this. Like, so can we just take a moment to appreciate Sam Morgan in the chat, please, everyone? What a fucking legend! I need to it's embarrassing. I need to do more presentations, is what I'm going to say. I've got Simon Hall on tomorrow, who I know you're a big fan of.
I love Simon. He's the best dude. We've been having a war today about whether Shadow Warriors are good or bad. So that's good. What do you call those things? We're in a Discord. You know, some Discords, it's just all pictures of naked people of either gender, and some Discords, it's full on Warhammer tech. This is a Warhammer tech one.
Okay, that sounds fun. I want in. he's on tomorrow, so if he doesn't come with some presentation, then I'm going to be mad. That's all I'm going to say. Listen, we should probably head out because the net seems to be struggling right now.
And
I'm sorry, but I can't thank you enough. This has been wonderful. And I've really, really enjoyed this. And if you have joined us live, I want to say a massive thank you. Got any shout outs before we head out?
shout out to the Super Series. The first day of Super Series was so impressive. I'm at a local club with quite a number of new players that aren't tournament players, and everyone was watching it. And everyone, the chat blew up that night to the point that the people were posting in the chat like, yo, no spoilers, I'm going to watch the rest tomorrow, because it runs overnight for us here, obviously. No spoilers, I want to watch the rest tomorrow, we'll talk about it then, sort of thing. It was like we were binge watching our favorite show. So I'm really looking forward to more Super Series, and it's so cool that there's a legitimate competitive, because I play other games where there are bands and where you get to choose your own Pokemon, as it were, and that it's just, for me, introducing that kind of thing ups the the game within a game and the game theory, and I just love that stuff. So I thought it was awesome, and I'm really looking forward to seeing you continually improve that over the next year and beyond.
Oh man, thanks, appreciate that loads. Like you're great. Like if I'm honest, can you just make Warhammer content, because I just listened basically for an hour, so I'm just gonna, like, I might even listen to this back, and I've never, thankfully I shut up for most of it, I can't ever watch shows back because I'm on it, so how you guys who are listening now do it, God knows. But yeah, thank you. This has been really fun. Really fun. My only negative is that hopefully these come as an individual box at some point, as opposed to buy the bit. That would be sweet. Yep. That's kind of the plan. Anyway,
we never mentioned the other half of the box is some dudes throwing fire, but I didn't read that scroll. They didn't get a PowerPoint.
It's pretty bad. I'm not going to lie to you. Again, that dartboard system. So thank you everyone for joining us live. Great analysis as Professor Smork. I'm sold. Ziggy, Nick, big shout. Join us again tonight, obviously, for the 40k show. Please do. Sam, you can find him hot on Twitter in several locations. If you can find the right account at this stage, that's the minefield. Sam, thank you. Thank you to everyone on Patreon, and thank you to everyone on the podcast. Please stay hydrated. Look after yourselves, and what was the thing I was going to say? Oh, yeah, in the comments below, this is my new sign-off, in the comments below, if you'd like to let me know why you think the double turn is bad, and I can tell you you're a stupid idiot. And thanks very much. Goodbye.